welcome to the podcast. We are doing excellent. We're having great success with kids coming in here, learning how to shoot, having fun, and then translating it onto the ice.
Absolutely, in a good environment. You know, the pressure here is, I think, really for the kids to try hard, but there's no political side to this. And, you know, we're not their actual coaches in games. We're here to actually make them shoot better, play better, but also gain confidence. So when they do go to their team, a lot of times the coach is like, where have you been? How'd you learn how to shoot like that? And obviously the Slapshot Alley is probably one of the greatest places you can go.
This is Cassius on his first session. You can see that he is just swinging as hard as he can into the puck, not really knowing what to do with his feet, not really knowing how to use his body. How to hit the ice properly is a big thing, you know, coming down on the ice and learning how to use the stick properly. And then after eight sessions with us, he's turned over. He's got good balance. He's hitting the ice with a closed blade, getting a good grip on the puck. The puck isn't slipping off the blade anymore. Now he's able to get a good grip on the puck, and he's using his whole body instead of just his arms, right?
The other thing I noticed there, too, is you can just see the weight transfer, the power. And when he finishes, he's actually ending up where the rebound might go. On the other shot, you can see his front foot is going to the side, so he's going to end up skating away from the rink or the net. So by doing this proper technique, not only you might score, but you're able to get a rebound. And a lot of times that's where the goals are scored. Yeah. So what a difference.
So we got 9-year-olds that normally have these symptoms of swinging as hard as they can. And I always kind of tell them, you know, it's just like baseball. Your baseball coach kind of tells you, go for the single. Don't swing as hard as you can. You're going to strike out. Don't try to hit home runs. You know, when you're just this age, it's important to slow things down.
Yeah. I think the biggest thing also is that the technology in a hockey stick, you use a graphite stick. If you load the toe up and have proper positioning, it's just like golf. When you go hit a driver, it's to have a hard shot, it's all technique, but it's all flow. It's all about timing. And you can see here the timing with the shot. He transfers from one foot onto the other foot and right through it. It's just exploding through it. And you can see instantly what a better shot. And now he's onto something. So now he's going to have confidence going and practicing this in a game, in a practice. But also, now once he's got this down pat, his perfect technique, he's going to start going for targets, being able to shoot low, high, and that's, I'm sure, where Andre, you're going to be going next with him, is now, once he's got the technique, now it's hitting your target. And it's exciting. I mean, Slapshot Alley is a great place for them to come. It's a fun place, and kids can be kids again, but also be learning something, so that's what makes it fun.
This week we had a couple of kids come in, and it was just after the U18 tournament had finished.
Yep.
And they asked me, hey, can we practice that Connor Bedard backhander?
Yep.
And so what we did was we just played the video, put it in slow motion, analyzed every little step, and then made a drill right here on the ice. And do you ever remember doing anything like that?
Well, I mean, it's great to emulate someone that does something and it works. You know, there's a lot of times I used to practice coming around, and it was called stuffing the puck. So you'd come around the net and try to stuff it, but you'd try to come around the net, turn your hips, and try to hit the far post and in. And if you didn't hit the post and in, it doesn't go in. The goalie saves it. But if you kept practicing something and kept practicing something, much like that goal you said, Bedard scored, these kids will end up doing it at full speed. And it's good. It's important to emulate. People have been successful. And I think that's something that, just like you did, you talked about that one shot that Gretzky would do down the wing, come down, lean over one way, get the goalie to move and go high bar down. So practicing is the best thing you can do in an environment where if it doesn't work, you try it again. And that's what we got here.
When you were 9 years old, yeah. where were you practicing and what did your practice scene look like?
You know, we played a lot of road hockey. And I was fortunate I got to play for the Burning Winter Club where we had good ice time, you know, three times a week. We had good coaching, Al Patterson, but also Alex Shabicki. When I was like about 6-7 years old, he taught me how to shoot early on and what to do on a breakaway. Where should the puck be on a breakaway when you're coming down on a goalie? And you know, that part of it stuck with me forever. And if you ask me where, one thing for a goalie, if you come down stick-handling the puck in front of you, the goalie knows you can't shoot because you have to bring it back somehow to be able to shoot the puck. So he knows he's all you can do is fake and deke from there. So a goalie now, you want to outsmart him. So when you bring the puck off to the side, puck in the middle of the ice, your body off the one post, and probably of all the players I would say I ever played against or with, Joe Sakic was the best guy on a penalty shot. If I had to pick one guy, Joe Sakic would be it. Because he kept it simple. It was either that come down, that two-foot shot over the stick side to the right, no-nonsense, quick, hard shot, or he'd fake it and then go right up underneath the bar on a backhand. So, or he'd just come in quick and go five-hole. So he had three options. He didn't overthink it, but he came in with good speed, and he was by far one of the best and kept it simple.
Yeah, with penalty shots being such a important part of the game now,
big
that
time.
The NHL has changed the rules. Yeah. How many is it? Like what I try to do is I try to watch the breakaways that yep. are successful and then teach all those different moves, one or two or three to one kid. So when it comes down to the time where he's got to take a penalty shot, he's got three different options that he can think of, so he's ready for that opportunity.
Absolutely.
So Shabicki was kind of preparing you for that?
Yeah, and we were just young kids, but he taught us little tiny things like that. You know, he did win a Stanley Cup, the Rangers, back in the 40s. And he was obviously a very good hockey player, but he was out there teaching us young kids. And here's the thing. Some of the other kids didn't pay attention. So kids out there, you got to pay attention. Okay? So I was like a sponge. I listened to exactly what he told me, and then I started doing exactly what he said. And guess what? It started working. And then at higher levels, I kept doing it, and it kept working. And knowing that it works, you have more confidence. So when you come down on a goal and you look confident, they start kind of, they're not sure. But if you come down, like, you can just see when someone's got confidence. You can usually tell when you watch an NHL game, a guy comes in on a shootout, they're relaxed. Patrick Kane comes in, like, just brilliant. There's another guy probably besides Sakic. Just quick hands, make a quick move, and then it's in the back of the net. But if you come down with confidence, the goalie starts losing his confidence. It's a mind game. So once again, practice all these different types of penalty shots is huge. And they're, you know, even NHL teams now, if you're a fourth line guy in the NHL, that makes a difference. If you're a guy, maybe a smaller guy that has hands that is known to be a shootout guy that can score goals, you can gain points for your team, right? If you can't play in the top three lines. But if you're deadly on the penalty shot, which is a couple guys in the league that, you know, they play the fourth line, but they put them out for the third shot or fourth shot, it's crucial. And it's something that hopefully some of you kids that will have that opportunity doing that.
What about shooting? So you mentioned Alex Shabicki,
yeah,
and he gave you lessons on shooting. How many different types of shots would he help you with, and what was the environment like? Was it one on the whole team, or was it one-on-one?
Yeah, I mean, the hard part about when you're teaching, when you got like 14 kids out there, you know, he was teaching everyone. Back then, it was like around the boards, everyone go around the boards, grab a puck. and explaining to us that if you shoot the puck and it comes straight back at you, you're using proper technique. Isn't that interesting? How simple is that, right?
Right.
So if you go to shoot and it hits and comes back on an angle, that means you pushed out the wrong way, much like his first shot with his foot pointing the wrong way. So even then we were getting taught proper way of technique. Mr. Shabicki, you were not allowed to take a slap shot when he was on the ice until you proved that you could take the perfect wrist shot. And back then, he would teach us wrist shot and then a snapshot by pulling it in and then snapping your wrists. And then once you had that, you were allowed to line up the puck on the blue line, and all kids would come in there and try to raise the puck, and we'd chop it. Most of us would chop it because we weren't strong enough. So that was something that I'll never forget, that learning the proper wrist shot was crucial to a good slap shot down the road.
That's right. How would you say things have changed now that you've had experience bringing in Ty into the, he's almost a pro now. So what was your experience like with him, teaching him kind of the same techniques you learned, but possibly more, right? He's getting more one-on-one, right?
I think the biggest thing was the game changed. I mean, when I played early on, we were using wood sticks. And the wood sticks, you know, they would bend in the middle of the shaft, the old Sherwood. So you had to load the stick up more in the middle of the blade or in the heel, and then it would bend a little bit so you'd get a little bit of kick on the stick. But now these sticks are manufactured, all the different sticks, right? The kick point is making sure that you go toe down or you pull from the toe and then release. And anyone with proper technique now, much like in golf, can fire a puck if they have the right flex and they just load up the stick and finish with proper technique, you get the result. And I think with Ty, he always learned with a graphite stick just because at that age. And now he has a 93-mile-an-hour snapshot. So he plays in the American Hockey League. He's got a heck of a shot. He's scored a couple goals I saw from 40 feet out on a snapshot. And that's just by practicing. He's a lot of times in the backyard shooting pucks, and that's the way you get stronger is practice.
Ed, for those of you who don't know, Cliff's son has been drafted by the New York Rangers he's been drafted by the New York Rangers, and he's playing for the Wolfpack, the farm team right now, and he's leading the team in scoring.
In goals.
So it's highly likely that he's going to get a chance with the Rangers next year, would you say?
We're sure hoping. I mean, here's a kid, you know, he scored, their season's over now. I think they played 18 games. He got 10 goals and 8 assists. And the 10 goals, a lot of them were scoring from the outside, like 30 feet out, 40 feet out, with a snapshot, not a slap shot. And just loading up that stick and letting that puck go. And that's something that anyone can learn. Anyone can learn that by coming into Slapshot Alley, looking at the video, and really studying if you're doing it correctly, if you're not. And it happens fast, because once you get that right technique, the right shot, you'll see the result, and now it becomes mechanics of the body, and then it's muscle memory. So it's the same motion every time, right? So it's a fun thing when you see, like today, you saw huge gains, 3 miles an hour on a slap shot, 4 miles an hour on a wrist shot. And I think that's what it's all about. Now the accuracy is the next thing is what we're looking for.
Yeah, what Cliff's talking about there is that when the kids come in here, every shot that they take is recorded with a radar gun. So we always record their results, and we're closely monitoring their progress. And that's a huge thing for most kids. They come back here and they're pumped. They're motivated to beat their records. And quantitative results are important. I always tell kids when they're practicing at home, you gotta get a target And don't just try and hit the target, but count how many you can hit out of a certain number. So if you know that you're hitting 90 out of 100, you want to get to the next level. You want to make that drill a little bit harder.
I mean, you look at probably the best shooters right now in the league, Austin Matthews, quick snapshot. You know, we were fortunate to work with him back when he was 15, but I think if anyone worked with him, he's going to be a good shooter because he took the time to practice. But he's a big, strong kid. Not only is his shot incredibly quick, but it has a lot on it. When you see him, he's hitting bar down, post in. Like, this kid can shoot a puck. And I think that's something that, you know, back in my day, there was some guys that could really, you know, Mark Messier kind of started doing that toe drag and changing the angle on goalies, but would never be able to toe drag, go high glove. It was always five hole. And I think these kids now, all of them be able to shoot the puck harder than any of us ever could. And it's exciting for these kids. And it's the same thing in golf. I can hit a golf ball way farther now because of the technology. So there's technology out there. If you have the right tools, meaning the right understanding of how you do shoot correctly, the mechanics of it, get the right stick in your hands, the right flex, and you'll start shooting bombs. As simple as that.
You mentioned Mark Messier, and I love it when you bring up Mark Messier because I have a Mark Messier 1985 Sherwood 5030. And it's a custom curve. The curve is completely flat from heel to about 2 inches at the toe. It has this weird little fish hook. And, you know, I never really understood the mechanics of shooting until I was an adult. But after I got that stick, I was about 7 or 8 years old when I got it. But when I finally learned the mechanics of shooting, I realized why he always shooted low. Because he had the perfect curve to hit a low puck. But I didn't really understand that little fish hook on the toe.
What that would do is he was able to pull the puck in and fire the puck, right? And that little curve, it would just sit right in that little curve. Now, all you people out there, check out Riley with St. Louis Blues. When he's sitting on the bench, he's got a curve at the end that looks like that. And Jordy Ben. So there's a couple guys. I think it was Ben that was the original one that had that big curve. And I think they are good buddies. And then now he's playing it. But it's quite hilarious. When you see it, it's extreme. Like, it is, like, extreme right at the end so they can scoop the puck. And a lot of times they can hold off a guy because they're bigger guys, and it just sits in the pocket, and they'll try and pass it with one hand. So check that out. It's kind of cool.
You were given the name or the nickname Stick Doctor.
Yeah.
So tell us why that came about. Who's the guy that first called you that?
Well, I mean, the Stick Doctor really came because I was that one guy that when I did play, I was looking for every advantage I could. You know, smaller guy, not the strongest guy, okay skater. I could get out of the way pretty quick. But I needed, you know, like golf, you've got like 12 clubs. But in hockey, you can only use one stick. So I tried to build my curve to be able to do a bunch of different things. And eventually, with my curve, you know, I kind of put a little highlight so the puck would actually sit right in a pocket and change the goalie and actually throw it. And the goalie, they had a hard time figuring out what is going on. It's not coming off as normal as other pucks. It would always come off flat, would come off and then kind of change the angle on them. And it fooled them for a while. So the Stick Doctor is because when I played, I constantly was shaving my sticks, changing the curve. I'd be seeing what other players were playing, trying to figure out, okay, well, why can that guy shoot the puck so good? Is it the curve? Like Peter Nedved, this guy I played with, scored 40 goals. He was 6'2". He was probably 120 pounds wet.
Hell of a wrist shot.
But he was so skinny. He had no muscle, but he could shoot. And he had this Titan stick, and he right at the end of the tight, and he bent it right here. He just bent complete there right at the end, so the puck would sit right on that little pocket, and he'd throw it at the goalie, and it would be a cannon bar down, and, you know, you can look up highlights on him. He could shoot a puck. So it's not if you're super strong or muscular. It's technique. It's about weight transfer. It's about timing. And when I saw him shoot, I just thought, wow, that makes sense. And different players had different curves. It just made sense for me. Some of the best players, that best passers in the game, all the best passers in the game that I ever played against, they all use a straight curve, dead straight. Right? Look at it now. Wayne Gretzky, Igor Larionov, and Crosby. Not the Crosby curve they sell in the store, but the actual curve Crosby uses is straight. And why is that? Because they have the perfect angle. They can sauce passes backhand. They can forehand. They have a feel. And most of the time, those guys aren't worrying about trying to score. If they score, they're happy. Even though Wayne scored a million goals, but he was always trying to make passes and make plays, right? So in the end, it's interesting. Some of the best passers ever, Davey Keon, dead straight. Like there's some, you look it up, and some of the best passers in the game had a straight curve.
Let's go back to Ty.
Yeah.
So Ty Ronnie and your son, originally he didn't want to be a hockey player. Is that true?
Well, I mean, at the time, you know, he was born in Phoenix. So at that time, I was kind of hoping he'd want to go be a golfer. I thought, you know, why not? It looks like a fun life, and he had good hand-eye coordination. But, you know, he came back to Burnaby there and started skating and was enjoying it. And he liked the competition. And, you know, he was a very good lacrosse player. You know, they won some big tournaments, and he could score there, and he was kind of a shifty little player. And
you got him in golf and lacrosse early,
and then soccer. He liked soccer. I think,
and those are all great sports to help you with hockey, right?
I mean, I always played different sports. I think it's so important for athletes and hockey players. It's only going to make you a better hockey player. I can name guys. Joe Sakic played lacrosse. I mean, there's so many guys that played lacrosse, and it helped them become better players.
Yeah. I think golf, it gives you the eye-hand coordination of, like, being very precise. So how early was Ty playing golf?
Well, I mean, you know, 10 years old, we'd go play. But to me, golf is mental, meaning it's the mental side. Golf is all about focus. Understanding focus, playing under pressure, but also playing with a good attitude. When you don't make a good shot, you're not, you know, throwing your clubs and having bad behavior. You have to suck it up, breathe in, and refocus and stay positive. And that, to me, is the challenge of golf, because, you know, you'll go play 3-4 holes and you're playing great, you're even par, and all of a sudden your next one you hit it and it goes into the trees. And you're like, oh my God. So mentally, you have to get your body to relax, focus on your next shot, and try to get back in the game again. And I think that part of golf to me is playing under golf etiquette, understanding etiquette of the game is important. But golf is typical, like a life story. It never goes exactly your way. You know, like the first couple holes might go your way, or the first hole, you might hit it right out of bounds. It's how you react afterwards. So that's why I personally like golf. But, you know, getting into the other sports, lacrosse, I like the roughness of it. I like the hand-eye coordination, the team camaraderie.
What I notice about lacrosse is the way you're able to fake people out. I think that
right.
That really teaches people, Like in lacrosse, that's a huge thing. Always be faking which that's way you're right. going to go. And then that kind of gives a hockey player that yep. kind of same movement. You can still do that with your stick yep. handling, right?
What's interesting is, like, looking back, like, Mr. Shibicki would always tell us to, like, you know, move your head in the sense of you're trying to deke someone. You don't see that much anymore, right? You see, you know what you see do that is that little Kerfoot on Toronto. Now, remember what I said? He comes down. He's got the little head bobble going. You're not sure which way he's going to go. Like, these are important things that we were taught, but you don't see that much, you know? And you don't see a lot of guys, like, the first thing when I'm, especially in lacrosse, when you pass the ball, when you're running down the floor, you look behind you to see who's coming. But in hockey, for some reason, a lot of these kids, they forget to look over their shoulder to see what's coming. You're going down on a two-on-two, and you can drive the line wide, take a little look. Oh, all of a sudden, one of your teammates, you can give the puck back to him. Or someone's coming down and steal the puck from you. So that's one thing which determines a really intelligent hockey player is someone that's always checking over his shoulder. And that's something I'm sure scouts look for. Yeah.
And then going back to Ty, he's got such a great attitude. Whenever I see him, it's always like just a pleasure to you know, talk to him. He's always in a really positive
Ty's more than a hockey player. I mean, you know, he got the humanitarian award in the Western Hockey League.
How did he get that?
Well, I mean, you can read on Ty is kind of that one guy. I mean, like, I don't know how to explain him in the sense, but I mean, I've always tried to be courteous, but Ty's always been like to the extreme. Like, there, you know, even there's here's a story I found I didn't even know, but. There's a guy that's on the street and begging for money, and Ty goes, "Hey man, I want to take you for breakfast. Let's go." And then I find out that Ty took him for breakfast and they sat down and talked, and this kid used to play hockey, and it was like, emotionally, as a dad, I'm like, wow, holy, I'd be like scared to do something like that, but that's not Ty. He did that. There was a kid in high school that there was a big story on it, and there was a boy that you know, he was having some difficulties at school, maybe getting bullied a little bit, and Ty kind of took him in, protected him a bit, you know, let the other kids know that this ain't the way you treat people. And then Ty ends up playing for the Giants, Ty, you know, even phoned him and gave him tickets to the game, and he came to the game and was waving to Ty, and ended up being Ty's, you know, biggest fan. He ended up going to all the Giants games, and there was a big article on it in the Vancouver Sun about it, and I really didn't know how it all went down, but Ty pretty well, you know, protected one of his kids at school that was getting bullied because he felt it was unfair. And he does those kind of things that are no one really knows about, but they come out later and you find out later. So I'm proud of him for that. That's pretty cool.
Yeah. I mean, it's just that type of personality that I think the hockey culture really nurtures. I mean, I find that hockey is one of the best cultures in the sport for really teaching those type of values. Have you experienced that along your career?
Yeah, I mean, you know, I was so fortunate to play for Pat Quinn. And, you know, maybe I didn't have the values. And I always had the values, but I really understood them when they came from Pat Quinn. And to really understand them when it comes from a man like that really... is just a good, honest human being that is really bigger than life. I know he's not around anymore, but I often think of him. But he really knew how to talk to the players. He made all of us feel like we're his sons, and not just me, but not just the players, but you can hear people that worked at the Coliseum or worked at you know, Rogers Arena and stuff that. He'd be talking to the hot dog vendor. He'd be talking to the person parking cars. he just was a people's person, and he cared about everyone. And I think that, to me, it was kind of like, wow, this is someone that you can look up to. And I think all of us, especially the 94 team, we always talk about it, and we try to give back as much as we can. I'm on the board for the Canucks alumni, and we've given a lot of money to different charities, $3-5 million in the past like 10 years here, and we're very proud of it. And a lot of that comes from Pat Quinn making sure you give back to the community, and I think it's all in the back of our minds.
All right, you've mentioned the Canucks, so let's break into the Canucks here. So they're done. They're officially eliminated from the playoffs. So it's kind of a sad end to the year. I mentioned that, hey, can we use the COVID-19 as an excuse? And think
definitely not.
Definitely not.
There's been too many excuses. You can't do that. There's other teams that have had it worse. And in professional sports, you can't make like excuses. It's always results, and I think. When they lost Pettersson, that hurts. I'll give him that. He's a trigger guy on the power play, but he also, when he's playing good, he's good. So he's a guy that can change games, and they didn't have that. But, there's guys that have had a decent year, and they've struggled through it, but they've worked hard. Bo Horvat, just a great captain, a hardworking, honest guy. He plays hard every night. And, it's sad because this city, they really deserve a winning team. And it's coming. They're 1, 2, 3 players away. It's still, I think we've talked before, there's a guy that I thought they let get away that absolutely didn't make sense to me anyways.
He's talking about Tyler Toffoli. I mean, we all appreciated what he did last year, especially in the playoff run.
Yep. Toffoli would have been, with Pettersson, I'm sure, because he's the perfect match, and it seems like Horvat plays great with Brock. So, I mean, they definitely got some good things moving forward, but the only problem is we get other teams getting stronger too. That's something that it's going to be next year. Is going to be really interesting for a lot of teams, because I think a lot of teams will be clearing house and trying to figure out, okay, where are we going from here? And you got new teams coming in like Seattle. So Seattle is going to put pressure definitely on Vancouver to make sure they're ready to go next year, because that would not be good if that rivalry turns out the wrong way.
Okay, so you're a Canuck fan, but I guess you're also a New York Rangers fan?
I am a Canuck fan, and I watch the Rangers.
You're watching the Rangers close.
I watch them very close.
Okay, so we had a big thing with the Rangers and the Capitals this week. Mm-hmm. Do you want to go over? Were you watching the game?
I watched the game, yeah.
And you saw this live?
Yeah.
So what did you see? Do you remember the actual scrimmage?
I watched the whole thing. Yep. I saw it. It was something that, back in the day, this happened all the time when I played. But you can see Buchnevich here is completely defenseless. Like, that punch there was, like, back when I played in the late 80s, that was automatic. Like, look at, he's a tough guy. And overall, he should have been suspended for sure, especially at least one game so they didn't have the next night. And you know what? I have a feeling these playoffs, we're going to see more fights in this playoffs. I know some people like it. A good fight, I like a good fight that's fair. But I think we're going to see a lot of fisticuffs in this playoffs, a lot of intimidation going on. And he should have got suspended for that. Now, I did hear something also from the GM from Pittsburgh Penguins. And the old goalie there. What's his name? Hextall, Ron Hextall. So according to the rule, when he did punch him when he was under the scrum, that was a penalty. But once Panarin jumped on the back of another player, he's in a situation that he's starting it. So you got one side, the tough side, saying it's fair game. And then you get the other side that is pretty well common sense. When someone doesn't have a helmet, you don't slam their head to the ice. So you know what? This could have been really ugly, and I'm kind of disappointed, I guess, in Peros that he didn't at least give it one game. They're playing the Rangers the next night, so just give them one game, $5,000, and then things will kind of cool off by the next time they play within a year, right? So to me, that was definitely a mistake on his part for sure.
And then the NHL's response to the Rangers statement.
Yeah.
What did you feel about all that?
Well, there's policy. The NHL policy is, and all the owners know, that you cannot say bad things about anyone that works for the league or you'll get fined. So once they made that statement, they were going to get fined. There's no way around it because it's just $250,000. Maybe that's why those, you know, Gordon Davidson got fired. No one will ever know. Well, they'll find out eventually, but maybe the owner didn't want that sent out. Or he knew there was a $250,000 fine. It wasn't worth it. So that's going to be interesting. Well, I'm sure we'll find out kind of what's going on here in the summer, what went down. So
the NHL posted a picture of the Washington Capitals on their Facebook profile as all this was happening. Do you think all this could be a way of the NHL trying to make a little bit of extra money by, you know, getting this kind of rivalry hyped up a bit? I mean, there's got to be some hype behind Tom Wilson's action. I mean, he's causing a lot of stir in the media, right? So did that ever happen throughout your career? Did you notice?
Well, absolutely.
Yeah.
That was, that sold tickets. That was, especially back in the day with Tiger Williams and, you know, all of a sudden Tiger Williams getting like 3-4 fights. And
yeah, so like the NHL is trolling the Rangers by posting a Capitals picture on their profile.
Yeah, yeah.
Right after this happens.
Well, I don't think the NHL would ever admit to anything, but good fisticuffs help sell tickets. I mean, I actually enjoy watching fighting in a game. I hate to say it. I really do. I don't want to see anyone get hurt, but there's something about the aggression for guys, probably. Maybe the ladies like watching the odd scrap, but I like the fighting when it's for a reason, not just for no reason at all. It's kind of like, let's play hockey. I want to watch hockey. But when it's to protect a player, or if someone's done something that's completely off the charts, doing the wrong thing, and someone comes in there, I love that. I grew up on that. And when I played, you know, I wasn't a fighter, but if someone did something bad to one of my players, I would still go in there knowing that I'm probably going to get killed, because that's just part of...
You're the Artemi Panarin of the...
I probably wouldn't have jumped on the back. I would have probably at least tried to trip him or something. I wouldn't have done that, because you saw how strong that guy was. He just lifted him up like nothing. I mean, it'd be like trying to go after myself, going after a guy like Gino Ogic. Like, these guys were big and strong. I'll tell you who got me pretty good one time. I'm just trying... He was 33... McSorley. We were playing LA Kings, and I was starting to score some goals, and he didn't like that, but he knew he had to take me out, and I was in front of the net, and then all of a sudden I just get absolutely cross-checked in the face, right? And then he lands on top of me to hide that he got me. But in you know, I was kind of brought up with that, playing for the New Westminster Bruins. So I was used to it, but I didn't see him. I wasn't ready for it because I didn't expect him to do that. It was just like totally out of the blue. And he was one big man. He could fight.
You're good friends with him now though, right?
Yeah. Yeah. Well, we talk about it and he told me, he said, you're scoring too much and I had to shut you down. So he couldn't catch me, but he could get me pretty good while I was standing in front of that. And I paid the price. So that was the way the game was to me. That means I must have been doing something right for him to come after me.
All right. All right, let's end things off with a question. So we've got a question from our loyal fan base. This is from a mom from New Westminster that brings in one of her kids. Cliff, what was it like playing with Yerke Lume?
Yerke Lume, probably one of the strongest players on his skates that I've ever played with. Probably the strongest on their skates was Jágr, and I would say a close second was Yerke Lume. I mean, he had this curve on his stick. He'd come down and get the ski boots out, we'd call them, and then just go around, guys. Yerke Lume was a fabulous hockey player. And I would say Yerke Lume could have been one of the best teammates any player could ever have, and that... I think if you ever asked any other players, they would say he was a great player. But as a teammate, he was a complete 10. You couldn't find a nicer guy that always looked out for his buddies, that's for sure.
He was kind of an offensive-style defenseman. And
definitely.
He has a kind of a unique style of skating where he's able to shift and really skate on the heels of his skates more than anything.
He did skate on the heels. But if you... Yerke Lume had like the longest legs you've ever, like he was tall, but he was almost all legs and he had a big rear end and strong. And he, like you said, it was like, sometimes we say be out on his skis. It seemed like it would be back on his heels. And when you're back on your heels, they don't know where you're going and very hard to check. And you know, he was one of the first guys that used to do set plays off a face-off. They would send him down the boards, right? Not too many teams used to do that, but that's what he was, one of the first ones coming in, and you'd come and see him and then score going upstairs, going down the wing off a face-off in your own zone or in the offensive zone. So, but Yerke Lume overall, he could pass a puck, just all-around great player, but I would say even better teammate than anything.
Now I see him quite a bit at the Richmond Ice Center. He usually comes with his daughter for the early morning ice sessions that are about $50 at Richmond Ice Center. You can get a sheet of ice there for $50.
That's a good deal.
And usually see Yerke with his daughter there.
Yeah,
and I hear she's becoming quite a good player.
Yeah, she's tall like him too. I heard she's a good player.
Yeah. Have you looked up into this NWHL at all this year?
The ladies?
The ladies hockey league?
You know, I haven't followed it a lot. I watched the Olympics because there's such a rivalry once we get back to like the aggression of Canada against the U.S. because the teams are so close and those are always rough games. So I enjoy watching when they play because the two best are playing against each other. I think it's really good. I think female hockey has improved immensely, and especially the girls going to college are so much better, and I think it's time. It's good hockey, and it's fun to watch, and I look forward to watching it when they get playing here in the next couple weeks.
We get a lot of girls in here learning how to shoot at the Slapshot Alley. And we get so excited when there is another team getting established in the NWHL. So we're hoping that the NWHL gives these girls a chance to have a professional hockey career. You know, looking forward, it gives them something else other than just a dream for a scholarship or a chance to play on an Olympic team, but actually playing as a pro hockey player.
Yeah.
You know, have a life playing hockey. Excellent. It's something that really motivates the kids in here to work harder.
Absolutely.
So that's it for today's show. And
Yeah, if you got questions and we'll try to answer them, or if you think there's something that you'd like us to talk about, let's go for it. Just send in to Andre.
That's right. Just send it in to slapshotalley.com. We've got, you know, social media. You can comment there, or you can just send us an email, and we'll let you get to be a part of the show. So thanks again for watching, and we'll see you next week.